Well, hello everybody, and welcome to our weekend, Members Weekend on Causation. And I hope you're going to find the weekend interesting, thought-provoking, and most of all, enjoyable. So a few thank yous. First of all, thank you to all of you for being here this weekend. We wouldn't have a Members Weekend without you being here. And I'd also like to say a big thank you to our first speaker, Anne Long, because it was Anne who suggested the topic of causation on one of our online discussion forums. Also, I'd like to say thank you to all of those who responded to the call for papers. We had a number of really fantastic offers, and I'm just sad that we couldn't incorporate all of those into the weekend. But those of you who've been to Members Weekends in the past will see that we've got 7 speakers instead of the usual 6. Now, in order to accommodate that, we've had to drop off one of our panel discussion times. So, just to give a little bit of introduction then to the whole question that we're going to be dealing with over this weekend. The nature of causation is probably the most fundamental and puzzling of all our philosophical dilemmas, okay? And we may ask whether much progress has been made in our understanding of causation since Anaxagoras, and now we're talking more than 2 millennia ago, asserted that it is mind that produces order and is the cause of all things. Now, for those of you who believe that matter is the cause of all things, or that mind somehow emerges from matter subject to a set of strict physical laws, Anaxagoras' view seems quite absurd. Fast forward to the 18th century, and we have David Hume, who, in attempting to understand the workings of the mind and what causes one belief rather than another, is perhaps the first serious thinker to attempt an analysis of causation in terms of the relationship between cause and effect. Now, Hume argues, and many of you I know will already know this, but he argues that the idea of this relation between cause and effect as having a necessary connection arises from our prior impressions or experiences, and is never a priori. He discovers 2 principles that he is unable to render consistent. The first is that our perceptions are of distinct existences. The second is that the mind never perceives any real connection among the distinct existences. And so he concludes that the idea of a necessary connection between cause and effect has its source in our repeated experience of one thing following another, and our consequent expectation of like things following like. Now, Immanuel Kant said he was woken from his dogmatic slumbers by his reading of Hume. And he points out the obvious truth, that our experiences are not of objects as they are in themselves. Rather, our experiences are of the appearances of objects. So that our theoretical knowledge that we have is of mere appearances. That's the limit of it. And he says that experience can show us that one appearance usually follows upon another, but not that it follows necessarily. So the concept of cause, if taken to be a necessary connection between 2 happenings, must either be found completely a priori in the understanding, or must be given up altogether as mere hallucination. Kant deduces the principle, everything that happens has a cause, from the single condition of the objective possibility of the concept of what happens in general. namely that the determination of an event in time, and therefore of the event as belonging to experience, would be impossible unless it was subject to a dynamic rule. He points out that we cannot simply, by combining the concept of cause with a concept of substance, at once have the understanding of how a substance can be the cause of something in another substance. A special act of understanding is required. This special act is imagination. If from the existence of things in the world we infer their cause, this inference is part not of the natural world, but of the speculative use of reason. Kant points out that in practice, we sometimes find a cause is also an effect. Now, if you think about the heat in a room, is both caused by and the effect of a stove. So cause and effect can be simultaneous. Therefore, it is mind that orders cause prior to effect. We can speculate about causes, what causes things, but the answer is beyond the limits of our understanding. Kant argues that the mind's regulative ordering of concepts is compatible with the practical experience of freedom and provides knowledge of what ought to be done if the will is free, if there is a God, and if there is a future world. Now, it might be argued that Kant's arguments are merely sort of psychological speculations, and that what we should be doing is basing our analysis of causation on testable observations. My beliefs about causation are largely, but not exclusively, derived from practicing medicine. Medical science posits many different causes in order to explain diseases, and seeks to explain why, given a certain set of conditions, some individuals show signs of diseases where others do not. Medical causes are inferred on the basis of observing associations between phenomena and on what is known about the biology and chemistry of the relation. Advances in the study of the diseases suggest that the relationship between cause and effect may be considerably more complex than Hume or Kant envisage. I was going to raise the difficult question. Is it that some additional condition is missing from the regularity causal explanation, or is it that a non-regularity account of causation is required? Now, our first speaker, Anne Long, will argue that causation is an idea which at this particular moment in history is in crisis. Gordon Nichols will then explore the concept of causation in infectious disease epidemiology. Jonathan Harlow will argue that there is nothing more to the idea of causation than that there is some explanation. Michael Donan will consider counterfactual theories of causation. Jeff Oliver will argue that we suffer from causation blindness if our concept of causation is as defined by Hume. Bob Stone will argue that Kant's solution to the question of causation and moral responsibility is outlandish. And our last speaker, Simon Borrington, will consider arguments for an emergentist account of consciousness and explore the idea of downward causation. So without further ado, I'd like to hand over now to Anne Long. Many of you will know Anne. She's been a member of our Philosophical Society for many years now. And she's also the author of three books. One of them, The Making of God, was the subject of a members' weekend, I think in 2007, wasn't it, Anne? And she's now working on a third book, which no doubt we're going to hear a bit more about now. So thank you, Anne.